Okay, I'm just going to start. There might be one or two more people coming into the room, but I'll start with the introductions and then we will kick off in the interest of time. So thank you all for coming to this session. Our speaker today is Peeta Diamantidis. Her title, Beyond Numbers, Shaping Financial Wellbeing in a Disrupted World. Now, just a brief career history of Peeta. Peeta started off studying actuarial studies at university and then ended up in investment banking for her sins. Thankfully for her, she got out of that and moved into financial advice, where she makes a lot more of a difference. I think the main sort of thrust here today is really to the idea that actuaries should be shifting the focus from financial literacy towards financial well-being, with a large emphasis in that on communication. So I'm looking forward to Peeta's talk. As always, if you have any questions, put them in through the app as we get closer to the end, and we'll have a lively discussion at the end. Over to you, Peeta.
Thank you. Oh, very exciting. All righty. So I feel like I just should apologize up front. I'm not going to be following the template I was given for the slides. So this is the last time you'll see the appropriate branding. My sincere apologies. It's just not the way I present. So I apologize in advance. This session uses financial literacy and wellbeing as an example of how actuaries can go from being seen as data crunchers, for want of a better expression, to change catalysts. And I think that that power is absolutely there, but I think we need to shift from being merely respected to remembered for the impact you have, and going from insightful to really influential from the public's perspective, and certainly from my industry financial advisor's perspective. So I'm going to repeat what probably loads of people have said, but we're living in the most disrupted environment any of us have ever operated in. You know, it's the rising living costs, AI, all these things have meant that everybody's lived experience is overwhelmed. So there's never been a more important time for clarity, true clarity, which I think we would all agree goes beyond data. Those two things are not the same. Despite us as numerate people loving data, that is not the same as clear messaging. So the other thing that's interesting is things are moving so fast that we can't rely on gradual learning of the public anymore. This is not something that can be messaged over decades. It needs to get out there and have an impact immediately, because they're all having to make decisions now. So that luxury of time is gone. So I think what we need to do is recognize that when actuaries are interacting with the public, but also the other professions, financial advisors, whether it's regulators, whatever that may be, that they don't have time to interpret your brilliance. They simply don't. They can't interpret it for you. You are going to have to do that for them, so that they can get that insight and that brilliance and move forward. So it's time, I think, to adapt the way that actuaries show their brilliance. I think we really need to shift our messaging. So let me be blunt about, for example, the financial advice industry's perspective of actuaries. They're considered very well respected, but completely misunderstood, right? And considered people that are over there, not right next to us, as we embark on improving the lives of Australians. And I think it's an important nuance to understand that the belief in the technical brilliance is there, without a doubt, but completely hard to absorb. So every time there's a report from an actuary within a business, from the institute, wherever it is, there's a hesitation from our industry, because we're just not sure whether we're going to be able to absorb those messages and translate it for our clients. And I think that's really important to understand. This is not second-guessing your brilliance. It's asking how you interpret it. And in a world of overload of data, pings on our phones and our mobiles, you've probably been experiencing that all day, right? Messages, emails, all of us do. The last thing people need is more numbers, right? They need impact. So clarity is no longer a luxury. I think it's a responsibility of people with insights like you have. So we need to take the public, that includes advisors and others, on the adventure with you, which is more what I see actuaries being, which is that on the right. Take them on the adventure of your understanding and insight into the future. So let's unpack what's really going on. What are we seeing there? What's going on with the distance that, say, advisors or the public feel? Well, We're all not just battling complexity, we're battling overwhelm in our lives. And think personally for you, as you're sitting here, does it feel at the conference relaxing, or are you quietly thinking about all the work that's building up over the 2 days that you're spending out of the office? Is that fair? You're just like, oh, dang, the email list is going to be enormous when I get back. That's what every Australian feels like constantly. So, and actuaries have been trained to prioritise the science, right? The science of what you do, the rigour of what you do. But the people you're communicating to, whether they're government departments or their advisors or they're the public, they're drowning, right? They're just drowning in overwhelm. So what I want to do is sort of diagnose what that looks like for you so then we can come up with a framework of how we could change the way data specialists and even advisors communicate with the public so we can sort of break through this huge overload they're all feeling. Now, here's the first trap. When we're presenting a concept, no matter who it is to, you could be presenting to regulators, to your boss internally, whoever it might be, we make the presentation about us. It's our agenda. See, look at the thing I did, I analysed it, here's the outcome. Look, isn't that great? It's not actually about the end user, right? And all of us do. I've done this as an advisor, and I sit with great respect to our chair here. Fund managers do this to advisors all the time. You know, it's these complex graphs and numbers and all like, it's all about them, right? It's not about our clients, right? You see that disconnect? And so the people, though, trying to absorb it and listening, it goes, how does this impact me? What's this got to do with me? Why should I care? And if there's no other expression you take away from this session, why should I care is a really wonderful lens to put over all of the things that you produce, whether it's internally or for the public. If the communication you put out starts with what you want to say, you've already lost them. Deal done. Yeah. And I know that's a shift, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody else. I mean, as advisors, we've got to produce these idiotic statements of advice. That's not about the public. That's not about the clients. That's about us, right? It's the same problem, and it's why they don't resonate. Because the audience is fried, completely fried, right? They've got nothing left. And so when we're talking to them about something that we know is important, but to them is just another thing on the list, then they tune out. They're not sitting there with clear minds, having just done yoga, ready to embark on learning a new thing, right? That never happens when we're interacting. They're stressed. It's something comes up. Maybe it's on the news and they hear about this new thing. It's petrifying. Or am I going to have $3 million in super? Does that mean I'm going to get taxed? What is it like? All of this just creates more and more overwhelm. And the trick is to understand here, it's not that they don't care. Not at all. They truly do care, right? It's that their brain physically can't hold on to more data. They simply cannot. And you'll find that, I find that at conferences, like I find I absorb often some of the earlier ones, and then as the conference gets further on, I find it harder and harder to absorb more information, right? It's the same for the public. We're all dealing that on a day-to-day basis. So we have to work with the brain, not against it, yeah? So that means simplifying, framing, and focusing. And I'll give you some tips on that in a second, because what we do next is we just dump that data right on them, that blessed data, right? All of the great stuff. This is fabulous. This is insight. We were talking earlier. We're just literally talking about stats before you all walked up, right? Wouldn't that be great for the public to learn? No, it's another data dump, right? It is not helpful. And so when you think about how we present ideas, and this could even happen, you know, presenting to the board or the exec, we spend often 20 minutes explaining the model, 2 minutes of insights. Right? We've got to flip that. You don't have to show them how you do it, right? It's got to be about something they can take away. Now, as I said, you know, I get presented to by a lot of fund managers, and I was telling Douglas, I actually got asked to go in and do a workshop with the investment team of one of the Australian fund managers. And we were running through how do we get more traction with advisors? How do we help communicate with them? And the idea of all of the graphs that they present and all the data they give us when we go to a session came up. And I said, why do we use graphs? Now, why do you think we use graphs when we're trying to communicate something or when we present something? Can anybody tell me why we use graphs? Yeah. What's the expression everybody uses?
Picture speaks a thousand words.
All righty. Thank you very much. We have not met before and I didn't set that up. The question I'd ask is, I agree, a picture tells a thousand words, but is a graph a picture?
No.
It ain't. Now, these are actual slides from a session I was victim of. By some very I'm absolutely not undermining their intelligence. These people are bright that presented this. But I would challenge any of you to be able to translate this without an hour. Right? Now, there were some whopping great insights here, some stuff that we needed to learn about how things would shifted. But really? You know, now, if a really smart leader of a fund management team is doing that to advisors, and then we do similarly to the public, what do we think's happening? It's a disconnect, yeah? And it's happening all the time. And that also ignores the fact that for much of the public, unlike all of us who love numbers, they've got PTSD from maths at high school. So that just sent them into a state, yeah? You've instantly, and I've actually had a client say, every time I see a graph, I feel like you're saying I'm stupid. That is really common, yeah? So think about it, even with the teams you interact with in the business, I'm sure you work alongside sales and marketing, all sorts of different people who don't have the innate skills you have. What message are you sending when we represent data this way and we think that is the truth we're delivering? Yeah, so because what this assumes is that I was going to see what that fund manager saw. Like there's an instant leap. They're just making that assumption. Now, I didn't see anything that they saw, and even as they described it through the session. And this session, I'm sure Douglas can attest to this, was one of 50 of those for the hour. 50 graphs. Are you serious? I'm the actuarial studies financial advisor sitting in that audience. So if anybody's going to absorb this, it's me, and I was done. Five slides in, I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm going to look at my email. Yeah? So just because it's visual doesn't mean it's communicating. Really important, yeah? Now, what does work? This is a gentleman whose name is going to escape me, but his handle on Instagram is called Info Beautiful. Information is beautiful. This one on the left, NATO defence spending. What's the core message? The US is bigger than everybody else combined. Job done. Yeah? Humpback whales, originally at 125,000 globally. And I'm sorry if the shading's a bit hard to see, the whaling ban imposed, there was only 10,000. Since they put that in place, it's lifted to 80. Now, interesting, the data scientist graph of that would include every data point, wouldn't it? We wouldn't be able to help ourselves. Like, you've got to be accurate. I mean, you can't mislead them, right? But how much more powerful is that? Anybody could look at that and get that message. So you really need to think through the way we go from a graph we use to get insights, themes, trends, outliers to how I communicate what the actual insight is from that graph, yeah? Follow this guy on Instagram. He's fabulous. And it'll just start challenging the way you represent things. It's really clever. Now, what we do after that when we're using stats is we assume they land. So when we share a stat, we assume people get that message. Now, in fact, research shows that only 5% of people in an audience retain a stat. Whereas if you add a story to it, 63% retain it. Now, how's that for an outcome? If you had a board of 10 people, half a person, like versus most, right? I mean, think about impact and results. So stories create tension, they drive emotion, they're relatable, but most importantly, they're retellable. That's a really important message, is the ability to retell the insight. We need to get your insights beyond the meeting room, right? And that happens by finding the story that anchors it. And even when we get a great story, right, and we use that, we just don't let them do anything with it. We don't tell them what they should do next. We just go, woohoo, here's this great insight. See ya, right? We dump and run. So most people are in decision fatigue. We've already talked about that. So what they're looking for is, what's the next thing I should do? Great, I've listened, I've absorbed, you've made it really clear. What do I do next? So think about the last report you delivered, right? Did it end with a recommendation of the very next thing that needs to be done about this? Did it guide the next step, or did it just provide the insights? And you may argue, well, that's not my role. I think it needs to be. I think we've got to stop being a silo of information, yeah? We need to start having influence, and that means you've got to tell them what the action is. So I'm hoping the message is getting through that the value isn't in the data, right? The value is in the insights. And I think actuaries are insight engines. I think this gold lives in this group and can be really powerful. But the clear is it isn't about you being clever. It's about you being clear. Yeah? And in fact, I would argue if you can think of the smartest one of you that you know, they probably struggle being clear more than the others because the more they know, the more they want to tell, right? Clarity is so important. So have a think about what's the last insight you shared that really lit people up and what made it different as you did that. Tap into that, work out what it was and redo it. So I think there's loads of insights locked in the actuarial department. Never get further, right? There's gold. And I know as an advisor there is because every time I come to things like this and I'll have conversations and I'll pick up world-changing things for my clients. Every time, but they're all sitting in the actuarial department. So we need to get beyond the insight and we need to let the door open. And how do we do that? So the value of your insight only grows if it can get momentum, right? So even if you tell them what to do, you've got to then get momentum with it. It's got to be shareable. So how do you do that? Well, we've got to get all of those insights out of the junkyard. What do I mean by that? You will all, if you look at the work output over your careers in this room, have some glorious stuff that's sitting in very pretty PDFs and PowerPoint slides, never to see the light of day again. If you think back, how many things have you written, reported on, developed, analysed, and it's got no further? That's the junkyard, right? They're all just sitting piled on top of each other. They never got any further, yeah? So the tragedy is that the insights were amazing, but we couldn't get them out of there. They weren't retellable. That's what makes them grow, is them being retellable. So if nobody can explain it to somebody else, that's what retellable means. If not even me who has some background in what you do, but nowhere near enough, if somebody, one of my colleagues in advice, can't retell that story that's your insight, the job's not done yet. Yeah? So let's unpack how we fix it. Well, obviously clarity, right? Let's not aim to be the smartest person in the room. Let's aim to be the clearest. And this doesn't mean, I want to be really clear here, it doesn't mean dumbing it down. That's not what this is. Any expert curve, I don't know whether you've seen any of those studies that's about, you know, the levels of expert, you only become a true expert when you can simplify what you know, right? That is when you become guru, when you can simplify the core tenets of what you know. So that's where we've got to get to. So caveats, jargon, long-winded stories. I mean, in that other slide, you know, it had all the little numerates and the description of where the data came from on those graphs. No. Right? We've got to get rid of all of that. We've got to have clarity. We've really got to focus on that. And insight on its own then needs, beyond the match, we've got the match, it's lit. What are we going to apply it to? How are we going to trigger that retelling? That's how we make ideas spread, right? And what we're looking for here is it being socially shareable. I know if you're thinking, but Peter, I'm presenting to super funds or maybe it's to executive teams. I would argue if the executives had had a couple of drinks and were quietly not thinking you were listening, they'd be like, I have no earthly clue what that session was about, right? Think of them as the public, right? Make it socially shareable. So what do these look like in the wild? Let me show you some examples of some science that became some globally shareable. You got to drink 8 glasses of water a day. Now, this was actually a scientific work done by the US Food and Nutrition Board back in 1945. What it actually said was a healthy human being needs to absorb 2.5 litres of water a day, but most of it will come from food. Now, it's funny how that second half just disappeared, right? This has become a tenet, hasn't it? I mean, every gym, like everybody, 8 glasses of water a day, right? That's the power of narrowing it down to a simple message, simple to remember, easy to visualize, easy to act on, yeah? So, you know, I know your work is full of complex truths, but if no one can remember them to retell them, then they're not going to have impact, yeah? Here's another one. Sitting is the new smoking. How powerful is that? I mean, the minute you hear that, you're, oh, Because smoking is repellent now, right? I mean, socially repellent. You mean if I'm sitting all the time? And, of course, most of us sit all the time. So the power in this was a 2012 paper in a British medical journal. And then one of them interacted with a mate of theirs. I think there was an advertising exec. And he came up with that, sitting is the new smoking. Right? And then once again, it went like wildfire. There's TED Talks. There's whole gurus, wellness gurus, that has this as their basis. So it isn't about accuracy versus impact. You know, it's about both. Yes, it can be accurate, but it's got to have with impact. Now, this is an Australian one. Slip, slop, slap. Do they need to know the data or the likelihood or how many Aussies or I just don't think that has the impact we think it does. This could be repeated by teachers, parents to their kids, at the beach. What do we do, kids? We slip, slop, slap, right? And it changed the face of cream. And I remember when it first came out, right, these dorky, I think they were ducks, these dorky cartoon ducks that were slip, slop, slap, right? The strength wasn't just in the message. It was how easy it was for the general public to repeat it. Yeah, so the value isn't in the data. It isn't even the insights. It's in the retelling. How easy is it to retell? Could it be passed around the dinner table of people that aren't your peers? That's the benchmark. And that's how insights grow legs, right? Not through technical depth, simplicity, clarity, relevance. So is that even enough, right? Well, we've got the insights, Peter. We're retelling, you know, does that have enough impact? Is there more you can do? Well, the thing is, the retelling might give an insight legs, but the impact is defined by the action people take. Slip, stop, slap is a great example. It's telling them exactly what they should do. 1, 2, 3. Yeah? So we can't just stop at the aha moment. Yeah, we've got to go further. We need to understand what will take them across that insight threshold into action. Now, some of that means that the retelling needs to happen on a cycle. What happens is when those ideas spread, it builds belief. Yeah, that's what actually happens is it starts to be a truth, right? So we go from something you've got as an insight, we create a message, and then it starts to become a truth. And that comes from repetition. And that then this building belief is what creates momentum. Yeah. So up until that point, people still aren't acting. Until it's like, well, it's a given. Everybody's talking about it. I guess I better drink 8 glasses of water a day, right? So those are the stages we've got to go through. So instead of asking, you know, do they understand the insight? Instead, you know, we need to ask, do they believe it enough to do something about it? Right? Do they believe it enough? So I believe actuaries can spark this without a doubt. So this is not just understanding, it's creating a movement for whatever you believe in. And I'd love to see in any of your presentations or papers or anything that you're pulling together, adding an impact scorecard. What is the impact into the future of what you're suggesting? How many people made better decisions? How many behaviours shifted? How many lives changed? And when you think about the work in whether it's superannuation, financial literacy, anything like that, that's really where we're talking. That's what we're talking about. And yet we talk FUM. I mean, everything but lives, right? Lives lived. I think actuaries are phenomenal, at modelling what could happen. But now the question is, what did happen because of all of that work? What did you trigger, right? What occurred later? I'd love you to start thinking like change makers. I really would. Because once again, the value isn't in the data or the insights or even in the retelling without the action, without triggering action, yeah? And you can influence this without a doubt. If it doesn't move people, it's not changing anything. And you've done a whole lot of work and used that big, beautiful brain to no effect, yeah? So we promised that I was going to be talking about financial literacy and well-being. The reason I've set that up is this is one of the biggest spaces this applies. Right. I am particularly, as you can imagine, passionate about this given the world I live in. And financial literacy is interesting. We were debating this before the session. I think we need to move from, you know, sort of reframe from thinking about the public being informed. We don't need them informed. We talked about that data insights. We need them to feel empowered. Those are two very different things, right? In fact, I would argue they could know a little less if they can act a bit more. Right? So the word literacy, I'd love you to all never say again. Financial literacy. It's not where we're going. Yeah? What I'd love you to focus on is financial well-being. Now, the Gallup group actually defined this for us. So financial well-being is having the confidence that you have enough to live now and in the future. Right? So that's not literacy. It doesn't talk about compound interest. It doesn't talk about, do you understand inflation, which is one of the most common questions on financial literacy exams. Have you ever looked at one of those? Inflation, really? Quite arbitrary. So this is all about the head, the heart, and the habits, the actions. And the habits are the thing that most of the industry doesn't focus on. But as we pointed out before, the action is where the impact happens. So if we're not focusing on their habits, nothing's going to change. They're not going to change their behaviour. So I'd love us to think about whether we can shift from measuring financial capability as moving it away from knowledge. I just don't think it's helpful. Yeah? It's not creating impact. The old days, you know, and literacy, the financial literacy questions are, you know, about interest rates, what does diversification mean, how does compound interest work? I mean, it'd be like asking me about the science of how petrol turns into my car moving. Do I need to know that to drive a car safely and well? I have a Mustang. I definitely don't need to know that, right? It has a pedal, it goes fast, right? So I think we really need to shift our belief in financial literacy. We are assuming knowing equals doing. And hopefully I've convinced you that's not the case. Yeah? Excuse me. The new model, you know, will start asking how confident are they to act? Yeah? Are they taking steps aligned with their personal goals? What real world behavior is changing? Now, that insight from actuaries, I'd love to see. Some studies in behavior change. I would love to see that. Because it's not about them knowing the rules, the public. It's about them playing the game, stepping up, taking charge of their future. Yeah? So then we can talk of the things they're telling us about the actions they've taken. Yeah? Not about the equations they understand. Now, I recently, literally weeks ago, ran a workshop for these fabulous women, doctors in Newcastle. Yeah? And so they asked me to come in. They had a networking group and talk about money. I've got a profile I can do that's quite new called Money Mind, and it does a profile on your behaviours and habits and your values for money. So I sent them that beforehand. It's done by Dr. Catherine Hunt, and if you want to know more about financial literacy and wellbeing, all this stuff, follow Catherine. She's fabulous. So they all did that test before they came, and what was fascinating is on financial literacy, top marks across the board. Financial confidence, as low as it could possibly be. These are bright, empowered, self-employed women, all who feel like they know nothing about money and don't know how to act. They feel stuck. So on any measure that's the has financial literacy improved, they would be on the plus side. Yes, they ticked all the boxes, but they themselves feel like they're failing. Yes, so this difference, this disconnect is really important to understand. They still felt stuck because what they didn't have was what's the framework or the systems they need to follow to take action. Yeah, add in a bit of the complexity that yours, mine, and the fund management industry add in, and they're all just like, whoa, don't want to make the wrong decision. Yeah, so they just keep on putting it up. So what I'd love you to think about is how you can be the GPS. And what I mean by that is I think actuaries by your very nature are very good at the map, right? So looking back, here's the map and the analysis, and we know, and this is the optimized way. What I think we need to learn to do is then take that and push down and go, in two blocks, you need to turn right. How good is that now? Most of you are too young to remember having the thing open on your lap when you're driving and you're trying to follow the map and, I mean, bad, right? Bad, bad, bad. Whereas now, Google just says, turn next right, right? Or that idiotic thing it does with roundabouts where it tells you to go at the third exit. So it's all about the next step. So I'd love you to think about being the GPS in that way. What is the next turn, the next step? It's not about simplifying the science. It's just clarifying the direction. So I want to make sure that any work you do from this point on, whether in this space or not, has maximum impact. So I want to give you some steps or a framework you can go to make sure that happens. But I would particularly say if you work in financial well-being, advice, financial services. Please, please, please do this because we desperately need your insights. Each handover point in what we've stepped through, data, insight, retelling and action, has leakage points, right, where our messages get lost and our impact. So I want you to just step through this with me. The first leakage point, just have a think. Am I expecting the data just speak for itself? Have I just laid it out in all its glorious tables and graphs and I just figure everybody will understand? First check, yeah? Have you drawn out a real-world insight? And my ninja tip here, ChatGPT, folks. I frequently, if I'm presenting, I had to do a presentation for like a cricket club. I know nothing about cricket. I don't enjoy cricket, right? But I took some insights and I asked it, this is what the message I want to create, use cricket analogies based on the Australian team. Nailed it. Yeah? So, and they were just like, woo, Peter, they thought I was a genius. Clearly not. ChatGPT was a genius. But these tools can be powerful for helping you do that translation. Give it great context, know who you're talking to, and make sure you give them real insight. But here's the real measure. Would someone outside your team get it without you talking over it? If they just got handed it, would they get the message? Yeah? Every board member will thank you as you start doing this, I might add, because they have to absorb hundreds of these in a year. And so the clearer you can make it, the better. And could it survive in the schoolyard test, right? That sitting at the dining table sharing your day with your mates? Could you just tell that story, that insight, and everybody would get it? Yeah? And lastly, if they shared it, does that person act? Just step through each of those every time you're pulling together those insights. They're your leak points. If we can fix those, your work can really matter. So I think I'm running okay. I just want to close by asking, is your work being seen? Truly seen? Yeah? Not just read, not just filed away, understood, applied, and having impact. Because insight alone isn't going to change lives out there. And I'm pretty convinced you're all here to change lives. You came to a financial wellbeing session, right? This is what you want to be part of. It's what happens next that's so powerful. From your insight, what happens next? You've modelled risk for decades, right? Actuaries have nailed that. I think you've got it, right? I think now it's time to design for real-world change. Yeah, be the change makers you can. That's it from me. I really hope that you got some insights or value and I'd love some questions. Please connect with me in LinkedIn if you want to sort of see some more weird financial well-being stuff from this crazy lady here. But until then, may your work be seen, be shared and be acted on. Thank you. Excuse me.
Oh, that was great, Peter. Thank you. Do you want to come over and be seen at the front here?
Are you sure? All right.
Yeah, okay, that was great. Thank you. So if anyone has any questions, please do send them through. I'm just going to start with a couple of things. Seeing as you kind of attacked fund managers quite a lot during there. But, I mean, I've had quite a few debates with colleagues. People like to put graphs in the charts or the charts in their presentations. And I've often said what you say. It doesn't actually resonate with the end customer. But I think one of the things that they're trying to do is appear smart or sort of get credibility. And I actually thought that was quite an interesting question because some of the younger people may feel intimidated by the idea that as they're trying to build credibility, which historically would have been done by showing data, computational, etc., that you're telling them to go straight to the insights. So how does a young person deal with that?
Yes, so first of all, understand that credibility is not the same as authority. And authority comes from storytelling. Yeah, so when you can get to the point of being able to transmit the message, that's when you have that authority. Credibility is great, so don't get me wrong. I mean, I was a financial analyst, right? So I produced as many graphs as anybody else. But it changed. Even when I was in investment banking, they ended up hiring me to work within the businesses we were helping take over others. And it was because I could talk to train drivers. We were talking about I worked in infrastructure, right? Well, I could talk to train drivers and translate what we needed. So that gave me credibility and authority and grew my profile, right, because I could do that. So, yes, the data is there, but almost everybody that has asked you to do that work is going to assume that's the bare minimum you're doing anyway, right? They're not going to assume you didn't do the work. They're going to assume you did, and then they're going to say, what now? So get to the what now first, I would say.
I think something I often observe, you read a lot of non-fiction books. They often have one. They also, you can't judge a book by its cover, but often in a non-fiction case, you can judge a book by a sentence. They're often just trying to get one idea across, but you have to write 300 pages so you can stand up and talk about it, et cetera, et cetera. So there's often one idea. But repetition is another thing I've seen smart people often struggle with. So every time they do a presentation, they feel they have to come up with something new, and therefore their message never gets across because they're always...
Yeah, let's talk about repetition. So I don't know how much you know about movies, blockbuster movies, right? So when the Avengers came out and all of those cool people, including Chris Hemsworth, was traveling the world talking about the movie, they have to say, and I think the number was something like 50,000 interviews. It's this huge number of answering the same question from every interviewer that is convinced they're the smartest interviewer ever. And they have to look animated because, you know, the one time they look bored, that's the one that goes viral, right? So they have to repeat that messaging. Why? It sells tickets, right? It's the retelling. It's the repetition. It's the getting that message over and over again that gets the traction, right? So if actors can do that, I figure we can. Work out how to repeat the same thing over and over again to get that message through. I mean, I do it. When I'm designing a keynote or a workshop for the public, I might do hundreds of those in a year, right? You work out how to bring that magic and energy, even though you've got to repeat it, yeah?
There's a few questions coming. I have one final question, which is that in financial planning, you have to produce these horrible statements of advice. And for many actuaries, the interaction with regulation and the burden of disclaimers and how does that allow you to keep fresh?
Yeah, that's interesting. So the thing about the regulation is in its purest form doesn't actually require us advisors to do a lot of what we end up doing. It's the lawyers in the dealer groups that decide that's the case. And so there has been this revolution, really, it's beyond evolution, in advice, recognizing, almost revisiting actually what do we need to do and what's required. And centering the journey for the client as really what it's about. So, I mean, there's a lot of change still going on and still being held up for those that are aware. There's all sorts of things the government said they were going to do they haven't done for advice. In my world and my peers, we're ignoring it. I'm not using that as the base. I'm no longer anchoring myself to what the government has decided we should care about. We're way beyond that now, right? We're changing lives. We'll just do it as the bare minimum, right? So I think we had to shift because a 60, 80, some 120-page document doesn't represent somebody's life. I mean, that's just horrific, right? So, yeah, you've got to shift past that. But that's a good example of similar work you might have done. That WAD, you know, those thought papers, that's not the gem, right? That's not the value.
So I know we've got a mutual connection, and Catherine, I've actually done a podcast for her, which is coming out soon. But I'm interested in the Mike Thornton specifically is interested in how effective the typical financial planner is in communicating with their clients and what you think in general financial planners do well.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I would say I'm going to generalize massively. So please, I apologize for that, but it's sort of necessary. Old school advisors, most of whom are gone now, right? We went from, 25,000 to 13,000 advisors now. Old school ones were taught lots of soft skills, and one of those soft skills was storytelling. How do you communicate something so somebody, you're taking them on the journey? None of the graduates we're getting now get any of that. In fact, the degree is a higher level, which is great. I'm a big fan of that. But they are so immersed in the analysis and the learning, none of them have that. And this is a generation, with great respect, that don't like to use the phone to call people. So think about what that means in terms of communication skills. So we do have a huge gap. I've been pushing hard in the industry to say we need more people to do, like, I've done training in speaking, in debate, all that sort of stuff to develop this skill, because I think that's how you can sit in front of a room of 200 people and change lives, right? But it's a huge gap.
I think some people here who look like they're young enough to never have made a phone call. do you think AI chatbots will help or hinder this then, with well-being specifically?
Yeah, look, I'm excited about them. So, I mean, we are a practice that uses a lot of tech. I love AI as the nudge. So somebody needs to inspire you, and I just don't think AI or tech or the web does that at all, right? So you need a spark, But once they've got a framework, once they sort of know, oh, here's the path I've got to go on, to have a bot that's nudging you and that in the middle of the night you can go, oh, should I have set up my cache like this or that, can give you some simple answers to help you further your action, I think will be really powerful. There's some Coach Vox is a tool based in the UK, and it's a fabulous woman whose name escapes me, but she has built something that takes the genius of any type of coach, right? Anything, whether business skills, whatever it is, and turns it into your own AI agent, right? That your clients can use. And she said it's getting more business for those coaches, not less, because people can get insights and value anytime.
That's great. Thanks, Janice, for that question. We talked about the last plenary was about retirement. Jennifer Shaw has just asked the potential actions around retirement, they're wide ranging, they're complex. Mm. Have you seen any super funds do well in this space?
Yeah, there's so much great intent. So without a doubt, there's some super funds trying hard, right? Like I'm not discounting and spending, I might add, hard on this. I truly think they misunderstand the word engagement. When they talk about member engagement, what they're measuring is like asking a question or getting a form, like it's this interaction. That's not engagement, right? There's no inspiration. There's no spark. I mean, I'd love to see some of the super funds get more influencers, you know, thought leader, people that somebody could go, ooh, I want to follow that. You know, if you've seen what Beck Wilson is doing in retirement space, she's have an epic retirement. She wrote a book and she's got this flock of Australians now following around the country on this, right? The super funds, I think, need to be doing more of that because their member engagement stuff is not the measure. Right. It's sort of leaning on that literacy thing again, right? It's not going to the well-being side. I think they've got an uphill battle anyway. The distrust of institutions now in this world does mean that I think there's going to be a point they can impact, but it's going to be tough, you know? So I think collectively we all need to come together to work out how we get more, honestly, personalities talking about money. If you think, who can tell me one TV personality that talks about money? Yep. Another one? Koshy? Have we noticed a theme? If you think about their Pall Mall style, and I say with great respect because I know them both, but we don't have enough diversity in the influences in this space, people that are talking about it, so that people resonate with somebody going through the same stuff they are or look a bit similar to them. Yeah. So I think this sort of personalities thing we could really pad out.
So having had a go at fund managers and...
Yeah, I'm so sorry. It was just too easy. You were right there. I couldn't help myself.
Don't laugh too much, Martin. We finished the question on Martin Mulcair. Martin, actually, firstly, Martin's a good community. He said great visuals and an excellent model.
Oh, thank you.
I'm trying to say, so I think that's a compliment we would all echo. And Martin, a good place to finish is Martin's question. What is your tip for starting with the audience?
In terms of starting messaging next?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... anchoring in where they are. So one thing I do for, it's a bit different for actuaries. So I feel like I have a vague understanding of your world. When I'm presenting to a group, I will secretly hang out in spaces they hang out with for a bit beforehand, before I'm designing what I'm presenting. Yeah. So that I hear what they're talking about, what they're worried about, even the language they use, so that I'm anchoring what I'm doing from where you are, not where I am. So that changing that perspective is the first place I'd start, whoever that might be, including executives. Where are they at when they've got 40 things they've got to go through in their 3 days of board reports?
Well, I think that's a great presentation, some great examples. As Martin said, it was excellent modelling of the message you were trying to get across. So I think we can all put our hands together and thank Peter for a great session.